Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, Chapter 8, Verse 139. Translation. The very name Krishna means that he attracts even Cupid. He is therefore attractive to everyone, male and female, moving and inert living entities. Indeed, Krishna is known as the all-attractive one. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Just as there are many orbs in the material world, called stars or planets, in the spiritual world there are many spiritual planets, called Vaikuntha Lokas. The spiritual universe, however, is situated far, far away from the cluster of material universes. Material scientists cannot even estimate the number of planets and stars within this universe. They are incapable of traveling to other stars by spaceships. According to Bhagavad Gita, there is also a spiritual world. Parasasmatu bhavonyo yakto yaktat sanatanaha yasasa veshu bhuteshu Nasyatsu na niyashati. Yet there is another nature which is eternal and is transcendental to the unmanifested and manifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. Bhagavad Gita 8:20. Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Inabhutadai Swayam Rupakadamayatadati Svatpadantikam. He Krishna Kadana Sindhu Dinabandhu Tikatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishivana Sute Devi Panamami Hari Priyat. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The very name Krishna means that he attracts even Cupid. He is therefore attractive to everyone, male and female, moving and inert living entities. Indeed, Krishna is known as the all-attractive one. The name Krishna means all attractive. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining the nature of the material world with the stars and planets and suns and moons and their relationship with the spiritual world. Now we know that in the spiritual world there's no need for sunlight or moonlight or starlight or electricity because that world is self-luminous because nothing there is covered with the layers of ignorance and false ego which cause the collective and individual darkness in this world. But yet, there is a relationship, there is actually a symbiotic relationship between the two realms, the spiritual kingdom and the material world. And they have an eternal relationship with one another, as light is related to darkness, or substance to shadow. And because they are related in that way, as substance to shadow, or light to darkness, or reality to reflection, there are many similarities, and therefore it is very, it's not only very easy to take the reflection to be the reality because it has so much similarity, but it is practically, it is actually impossible to penetrate the veil which is covering the reality and escape from the bondage of this nescience by any human or mortal endeavor. Because the Lord's kingdom, his own abode, lies beyond the empiric grasp, these selfish exploits, which have actually created this material world by the desire of the living entities to imitate the pastimes of Krishna as the supreme enjoyer. The only means to attain freedom from the shackles of this limited three-dimensional world and regain our inherent freedom in that world of unlimited dimensions and no restrictions, is to hear submissively with oral reception and service attitude the pastimes of the Lord. And that awakens a remembrance of a time long ago in a land far away, although it's really not a different world. It's a different dimension of consciousness. And it's right here and now. If we can just enter into a spirit of Trinadapi Sunichena, Tororapi Sahishnana, Amanida Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari, and see through our self-imposed blindness to the reality which is within our grasp, but lies way beyond the grasp of any selfish exploits or empiric endeavors. The full moon, which is rising now, illuminating the beautiful qualities of nature as she dons her most beautiful gown to serve this blessed event when we enter into the king of months, Damodar, whose queen is Srimati Radhika and is therefore named Kartik after Kartiki, the daughter of Kirtida. It is the most worshipful time of year and an opportunity to make special progress on the path back home, back to Godhead, especially by hearing the wonderful pastimes of this most attractive feature of Krishna as Damodar. The prayers of Saptivata Muni, which we'll be singing, Damodarastaka, take us through a wonderful progression of realization of rasa, from his initial stanza, Namam Ishwaram Sachidananda Rupam, submission to the Lord, who is the supreme controller, full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And then gradually, through gradations of realization, entering into these sweet and holy, cherishable, relishable childhood pastimes, where the Lord's supremacy and the categorical difference between Him and us, His world and ours, is forgotten. Not forgotten, but transcended by the power of love. And then through His sweet pastimes of being chased and captured by Mother Jashoda, bound by the rope, Satyavrata Muni, through the symbolism of this pastime, introduces us to the fact that the only bond which can tie Sri Krishna is the ropes of affection born of Srimati Radharani's love, which is something that no mortal being can ever conceive or possess. But the love of the inhabitants of Braj who assist Srimati Radharani, whose most highest aspiration and cherished goal is Radha Dasyam's service to Sri Radha, because she alone can really fully, totally please and satisfy Sri Krishna. She is the essence of the Ladini Shakti. You see, the Lord has three primary Shaktis, energies. Sandini, which creates the world of form. Samvit, the realm of cognizance. And Ladini, the realm of love, affection, sweetness, beauty, charm, aesthetics. And therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam is such a cherished scripture of the Vaishnavas because it fuses theology and science with aesthetics. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, through its progression of instructions, beginning with the servants of the Lord, like Prahlad Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami, the four Kumaras, Narada Muni, King Pariksit, through the progression of surrender of these great souls whose pastimes form the narration of the text, we are gradually trained, along with being disciplined by a living spiritual master, to enter into the condensed essence and the real purpose for the Srimad Bhagavatam being spoken, and the reason for which it is superior to all other Vedic texts in delineating the Vrindavan pastimes of the Lord. Of course, they were already told in other Puranas. What was not revealed is the super excellent position of Srimati Radharani and the ultimate shelter of the jivas being in service to her, which allows us to attain some facsimile of her devotion and to be influenced by the energy of her love and thereby qualified by mercy alone to entrance into those sweet and holy groves of Braj, which are not possible in ages other than when Sri Krishna and especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu give us the method of pure bhakti, following in the footsteps of the servants of the servants of the servants in that topmost dweep in that self-effulgent sky. You see, the nature of the creation is that from Goloka Vrindavan, the childlike form of Sri Krishna emanates an effulgence which pervades all of creation, both spiritual and mundane, and grants the self-luminous quality of light in the spiritual world as well as the reflected sunlight, moonlight, starlight, and lamplight in the material world. So Krishna is the center of everything, and everything is simultaneously one and different from him, as well as one and different from everything and everyone else. The material cosmos gives an analogy to the Rasa Lila, which we are celebrating tonight, because in the center of the material cosmos is the sun, which grants illumination, meaning light, truth, knowledge, as well as heat, which is essential for life throughout the material cosmos. Orbiting around the sun are the various planets, which have orbiting them their various moons, which have orbiting them their various satellites. And the whole progression moves like a cosmic dance, sustained by gravitational pull towards the center, balanced by centrifugal force of a dynamic, ever-expanding creation. And the balance between these two forces keeps everything in proper harmony, balance. And there's no conflict, there's no collision in the Lord's arrangement. Conflict comes by the different egos trying to be competing for supremacy and being the center, which constitutes the whole difference between the material realm and the spiritual kingdom. So, in the spiritual world, the center of everything is Radha and Krishna. And their Rasa Lila is the ultimate reality which the reflection of this material cosmos is meant to remind us and guide us and instruct us into returning home. So, Radha and Krishna, on one level, the popular level, are persons. But the acharyas, who emphasize sometimes more the esoteric level, according to which Radha and Krishna are everything. Not an orthomorphic projection of personality, but the deepest mystery indwelling all reality, including and transcending personality. So, in the progression of Srimad Bhagavatam's teachings, we meet many paradigmatic personalities by whom emulating, we can be influenced by their devotional energy and partake by the process of sadhana, become elevated and purified by their influence. And we see that the Srimad Bhagavatam is not chronological, because chronology really has little relevance in the unfolding of the Absolute Truth. And therefore we find even there are chronological contradictions in the scripture. It's not important. What's important is the consistency of the unfolding of the truth. So, it is the Ladini Shakti of the Lord which creates two forms of the original one, Krishna, because there cannot be love, hence pleasure, alone. Pleasure is based on love, which necessitates two, lover and beloved, to taste the sweetness of Leela. And that two, which then expands into unlimited, because the love of Radha and Krishna is unlimited, again becomes one in the personality of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who introduced in seed concept what was later cultivated and instructed in Narottamdas Thakur, Srinivasacharya, Shyamananda Pandit as the Manjari sadhana, in which the mood of maidservant of the maidservant of the maidservant of Sri Radha, or servant to the servant of the servant of Mahaprabhu, is seen as more desirable than a direct approach to Krishna. Because according to the Ashraya theology, Ashraya means the shelter-giving devotee. And the devotee can experience and offer love and devotion to Krishna only in proportion to the depth of our own affection. Therefore, our experience, our realization is limited by the depth of our devotion. And as jiva souls, fragmental parts of Krishna, how much devotion do we have for Krishna? And how much of his love can we receive? We are so infinitesimal, tiny and limited in all respects. But by serving the servant of the servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the maidservant of the maidservant of Sri Radha, we tap into an unlimited reservoir of devotion. And the essence of the Ladini Shakti is prema, pure love of God. The essence, the sara of prema is bhava, the emotion of love. The essence of bhava is mahabhav, which is embodied in Srimati Radharani and is not possible for any other soul to experience but a facsimile, because her eight sakis, asta sakis, are the eight primary bhavas constituting the mahabhav which she personifies. And their maidservants and their maidservants are all connected with that love and devotion. And the experience of Krishna's love and the ability to offer him pleasure is all based on the extent of our selfless service. Canto by canto, up until the 10th, wherein the Vrindavan pastimes of the Lord are revealed, wherein Rasa Leela is the highlight, in a sense, as far as pure love and selfless sacrifice is concerned. And we know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his pastimes and instructions, would not discuss Radha and Krishna's pastimes in public. The talks between Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai carry on in a secluded place as an instruction to us that the romantic pastimes of Radha and Krishna are nothing like the romance which so much infatuates people in this world. The love of those selfless servants in the spiritual world is pure like gold and is called prema, meaning that Krishna's pleasure is the only objective. What activates the material world and all its activities is kama, which is like iron. And even though the false ego is so expert and so deceptive that it likes to convince us that we're really putting Krishna in the center, it's really, we are really very prone and vulnerable to deceiving ourselves into thinking that we are putting Krishna in the center, when it's really our own ego which we are very deceptively trying to glorify. And therefore, the pastimes of the spiritual world must be taught by a living embodiment of that absolute truth. The disciple must be cultivated gradually, systematically, scientifically into understanding the difference between kama and prema, and that the great danger on the spiritual path is to mistake one for the other. And therefore, Rasa Lila is so important that it must be contemplated and understood. And not in public, but rather in secluded place, in private, means not something to be broadcast as some kind of sensationalism. It is something to be cultivated, an understanding to be cultivated in a personal relationship with the living spiritual master who can train the disciple properly in humble, selfless service attitude and in proper understanding of the dealings between the inhabitants of the spiritual world and their Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam, through the selfless sacrifice of Prahlad and Hanuman and Shukadev and so many great souls, gradually evolves into the unprecedented, unparalleled, inconceivable, and unattainable directly, but attainable by their grace, sacrifice of the gopis for the pleasure of Krishna and the upliftment of this world. Now just try to understand Rasa Lila from this perspective. When Krishna, from that celebrated Vamsivatri, played on his transcendental flute, and the various gopis heard their own name being called by that flute, unaware that the others were also being called, to leave home in the dead of night and go into the forest, what does it mean for a cultured lady in a civilized world? It means the dangers of forest life and the ferocious animals and snakes and things is insignificant, inconsequential, in comparison to the sacrifice that those girls were being asked to perform in being branded as unchaste betrayers of their family and culture and tradition, meaning that they would never again have shelter of their families or homes. Who would protect them? Who would feed them? Who would maintain them? Who would shelter them? They would be branded and banished to meet who knows what fate. And they knew it very well. But for the pleasure of Krishna, it did not matter. So selfless was their love and devotion that they would just go to Krishna. And he tested them in so many ways. But they said that you are the soul of all souls, and by pleasing you, those who think that we are displeasing them will actually be pleased on the spiritual level. And then gradually, Rasa Lila commences. And as explained by the Acharyas, the Rasa Lila is the ultimate confrontation and victory of prema over kama. Because kama, the god of lust, who had conquered all other gods, right up to the level of Lord Shiva, who burned him to ashes, indicating that he also conquered Lord Shiva, who fell not so much to gross lust as to anger, which is a product of lust, now is tempting Krishna. He creates the springtime season, or in this case, the autumn, so beautiful, jasmine flowers blooming, fragrances, celestial fragrances carried on the breeze, the sounds of nature and song of birds creating such a heavenly atmosphere. You need the most beautiful girls in all creation, all assembling. And then, under the influence of then, Krishna, who is desireless, becomes filled with desire. And the dance commences, and kama, lust, thinks, now I've got him dancing. And then Krishna tells him to go home. He says, I can't. And Krishna engages kama. He engages the god of desire in Rasa Lila, by which everything is purified. But then, even in the spiritual world, where everything is unlimited and pure, it is ever evolving, it is ever expanding, it is ever deepening in clarity and influence. Nothing is static there. Nothing is stagnant. Everything is although all pervading, is ever increasing. So even the love of the gopis, which is supremely pure, is ever expanding and ever increasing. So when Srimati Radharani thinks that why is Krishna treating the others the same as me? Because my love is better and pure and more pleasing to him. Again, that indicates, although it's not, it is an instruction to us that pride comes before the fall. And then when she's thinking, when the gopis are thinking themselves most special in all creation, Krishna disappears. That pride is purified by vipralamba, by separation, by the burning anguish of losing our most precious object, which is reflected in this world by the sambhog and vipralamba meeting in separation with Krishna with their highlights of ecstasy and agony, are reflected in this world by happiness and distress, of which distress is preferable because it tends to be more purifying. Anyway, Krishna disappears. Then he reappears to Sri Radha, and she commands him, I'm so tired, carry me. And Krishna does. He says, yes, I will do anything for you. And when she's thinking, I'm so special, he leaves her hanging on a tree branch. as a lesson to us, don't ever think yourself so special or you'll be left hanging. So, Krishna disappears. To indicate that the mundane is always going to try to creep in the form of ego and pride. We always have to be on guard. And then Krishna disappearing also means that it illustrates his supreme opulence of total renunciation. He cannot be influenced in any way, shape, or form by any feminine wiles. But when that is all purified, when everything is purified, then Rasa Lila resumes under the influence of pure prema. And this evolution is always going on forever. And it makes no sense whatsoever unless Cheto Darpanam Majanam Bhavamahadavagni Darpanam, unless we purify the mind of all its dirty misconceptions. And then we can see Golokera Premadan Harinam Sankirtanati Harinam Sankirtan movement, when the devotees come together and dance to the joy of Krishna's holy name, which is functionally non-different from the flute song of Krishna, we are practicing entrance into the pastimes with the Lord. So, in the discussions between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai, which we are reading here, Ramananda Rai, through Mahaprabhu's questions about the ultimate goal of life, and whatever he answers, Mahaprabhu keeps saying, go deeper, go higher, until he just about goes completely mad. As they delve into evolving deeper mysteries and realities of the spiritual world, embodied in the highest truth, which reigns supreme in Braja as the beloved of Krishna, who alone grants him supreme pleasure. And her devotion is the ultimate goal, the supreme refuge, the ultimate ashraya, shelter for the living entities. And in these talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai, we are seeing the parameters of human possibility reframed through gradations of higher perspectives, focusing and culminating in the rasa of Radha and Krishna, the ultimate goal beyond which there exists absolutely nothing, and is the reality and perfection of life which Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas in our line are calling us and guiding us to return to in our homeland, which is beyond the realm of the bondage of ego and ignorance and their concomitant suffering. And our souls will always be restless until they're reposed in Krishna. And this month of Kartik is a very potent time to hear the pastimes of the Lord, to take a vow and to purify our consciousness so that we can see, as Vrindavan Das Thakur says, those who are fortunate can see the pastimes of the Lord taking place, even here, even today. It all begins with accepting the holy name from Sri Guru and welcoming the blessing of taking shelter of his lotus feet. When he imparts the holy name and it is planted in our hearts, which, when softened with humility and devotion, make a fertile ground for that holy name to sprout, to put down roots. Then, from that holy name, gradually, the holy form, the holy dom, the holy pastimes of the Lord will evolve in our meditation. And gradually, gradually, the material world will just dissolve and we will enter into the supreme reality from which we have come and which is forever beckoning our return. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Separation is the highest ecstasy because we like to forget Krishna. But as we actually develop a little love for Krishna and we hear that separation is the highest ecstasy, it tends to be a little disorienting and discouraging unless we understand one very essential principle, that there's no meaning to separation without union. And the separation is a means of entering into a deeper union. And in the separation, when the external world just fades into oblivion due to the intensive meditation on the object which has been lost, one enters into a deeper union with the Lord. And it is only because of that that we would dare to say that separation is the highest ecstasy. Without union, separation is meaningless. It's useless. But as a process for deeper union, deeper communion with the Lord, and then in that context, we can say it is the highest ecstasy. Because it focuses all the attention on the most precious object. It's like you see, once again, using the analogy of the reflection of the material world. In the material world, we see and hear of so many people who undergo terrible afflictions. And it either makes or breaks people, depending on which way they turn. One who takes an attitude of victimhood, like, why me? They tend to be destroyed by calamity. Whereas others who understand that there's a higher meaning and purpose behind everything and turn to the try me, which is expressed in the 26th Psalm, they become stronger. And you hear, without exception, the people who take that second attitude will unanimously proclaim that the calamity or whatever affliction came into their life was the best thing that ever happened to them. And it may at first seem like some jargon to just, you know, rationalize an unbearable situation, but really, these statements I've concluded are as good as gold. Because what affliction does in the material world, for someone who takes it properly and sincerely, is it focuses their attention on what's really most important. So this is a reflection of the process of Vipralamba and how it purifies even the purified souls in the spiritual world, that the affliction of losing the darshan of our most beloved and precious object of life so much focuses the meditation on him all the more, that it crystallizes what's important, which is Krishna and Krishna's pleasure, which is only revealed to us by the pleasure of the spiritual master. So in this way, we can understand and appreciate the saying that separation is the highest ecstasy, because it's a process of deeper union and intimacy of love, which they're forever enhancing one another in union and separation. So in that context, we can understand. Yeah.
You can't be lust, because as Krishna tells Arjuna, first of all, the complete discussion is Arjuna is asking Krishna, what is it that impels a man to act sinfully even against his desire? Now that alone indicates that lust is more powerful than human desire. And Krishna says it is lust and lust only, Arjuna, the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. All-devouring, meaning these are different ways of understanding that lust is beyond our ability to overcome. Our means of conquest is to surrender to Krishna, who alone can conquer lust. And if we surrender to him, he not only protects us, but actually, what is lust? See, all these anarthas, all the dirty, unwanted things, all the demoniac things, they're the dark side of the living reality. Lust is the dark side of love. It's the shadow. And it's false ego that comes in between us and the light, causing the shadow we know as lust. Did you ever try to fight with a shadow? Has anybody ever conquered a shadow? You can't conquer a shadow because it has no substance, it has no reality. You just get out of the way and let the light come through, and it's gone. It's defeated. So lust is actually a wonderful thing. I mean, everything in the creation has its utility and purpose. Lust is wonderful. It's such a powerful force because it's love gone astray. Astray from Krishna to me, to ego. That's why it's so powerful. Turn it again back to Krishna, and it becomes powerful as a purifying factor. And another way to look at it is, the consequences of lust are so miserable, it can be taken as a great impetus to turn to Krishna and have it purified. So that is a lesson to learn from this entity.
Thank you.
Well, he never left Vrindavan, so what's the significance to his coming back? These are different perspectives, different glimpses of the polydimensional reality, which, you know, gives each one of which gives us a little different angle of vision to enhance our holistic perception of reality. Krishna uses his friend in Krishna Lila, which is Uddhava. In other avatars, it's another agent who has a similar relation with the Lord as friend. In Ramlila, it's Lakshman. You know, it's interesting that what really devastated Ram more than anything was not separation from Sita. It was the thought of separation from Lakshman. The very thought of that, he said, I'll just jump in the ocean, but it'll probably dry up. I'll jump in the fire, it'll probably go out. And he just went mad at the thought of separation from Lakshman. The separation from Sita was, you know, one thing. But anyway, Krishna uses Uddhava, his friend, who you would eat with and joke with and lie in bed with and everything, go to Vrindavan and just, you know, see how they're doing and bring this message to them for me. And he said, all right. And then when Uddhava entered Vrindavan, before he entered Vrindavan, he was thinking he was the greatest devotee in the world, which he is, outside of Vrindavan. When he entered within Vrindavan, he felt like he wasn't any kind of devotee at all. And his prayer was just to become a blade of grass, to be trampled by the feet of those devotees there. So, and then when he saw, you know, Mother Yashoda, that her ovens were just covered with cobwebs. She hadn't cooked anything since Krishna left. Nanda Maharaj is sitting there in a comatose state. The gopis moving around like phantoms and ghosts, just everybody. Like, it's funny, in Krishna book, when Prabhupada tells about the lunar eclipse when they went to Kurukshetra, and because, you know, it was such a conflict seeing Krishna as a prince, you know, like in the Vedic perception, which is very masculine and very martial, Krishna's a prince. When the Brijavasi saw him, it created such a revolution in their consciousness that they went deeper and deeper. And then when they went back to Vrindavan, Prabhupada said their minds were so wrapped in Krishna that when they went back to Vrindavan, they went without their minds. You know, devotees sometimes they look like they're out of their minds. This is where it comes from. Anyway, what were you talking about? Krishna's coming back to Vrindavan. In some of the works of the Goswamis, there's chapters like Gopal Champu. If you look at the Prabhupada gives in Chaitanya Charitamrita the various headings of Gopal Champu, and the chapter headings are almost exactly like Krishna book, but then it has a few more chapters that Krishna book doesn't have, including Krishna returns to Vrindavan, Krishna marries Srimati Radharani. So, you know, the different acharyas, they're in different rasas and they're seeing on different levels. So, you know, some are seeing, you know, different things that would be conflicting to others. But ultimately, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So, but in another sense, the sentiment of Krishna leaving Vrindavan and Krishna returning to Vrindavan is always enhancing the love of the bridge. Every day they're making garlands at Krishna's coming today. They're cooking big feasts. And at the end of the day, it must be tomorrow. In that way, they're always wrapped in the ecstasy that Krishna's coming. And I mean, we saw a semblance of that when Srila Prabhupada was present. I don't know about other temples, but here in New Vrindavan, we were always hearing that Prabhupada's coming. And he usually never did, at least not at that particular time. And everybody be, you know, just so much ecstasy, they wouldn't just forget about eating and sleeping and just get everything so nice. And then he'd change his plans or something. But even today, or even, you know, some years ago, just at the beginning of Guru Puja, Ambarish used to run out and go, Prabhupada's coming, and everybody just like perk up, even, you know, years after Prabhupada had left. But that sentiment that Prabhupada's coming, those sentiments are always enhancing the love. So we have past sins. Krishna returns to Vrindavan. We have pastimes of Nava Vrindavan, New Vrindavan, and Dwarka, you know. The Dwarka queens, they saw the Krishna so absent-minded, and he really misses Vrindavan. So they made a whole replica of Vrindavan. And they had deities of everybody except Rohini. She had actually been in Vrindavan, then she was in Dwarka, so she was in a regular living form. Everybody else was just deities, and they saw how Krishna's going. And he saw the water. He thought it was Jamuna. He went to, you know, the big waves. Jamuna waves. And he saw about the horizons and, you know, towers and palaces. And he realized it was just a dream. So, in this way, we're just introduced into various levels of consciousness and dimensions of love, and how the process of Sambhog and Vipralamba are always working harmoniously, ever enhancing one another to increase our love. And also, it's also very important to understand that as Krishna, through his pastimes, is increasing the love of his devotees, the pastimes of the devotees as a reaction is also ever increasing Krishna's love for them. In this way, Krishna has designed the spiritual and the material world to where everything is meant to work harmoniously, just to increase our love. And that's what Rasa Lila means, the harmony, which is so beautiful as a dance. Because in the spiritual world, all talk is song, all motion is dance, and everything is activated by the song of Krishna's flute, which for us as Gaudiya, as servants of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, understand is functionally non-different from the holy name of Krishna. And we celebrate Rasa Lila by coming together and dancing for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra. Anything else? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.